Today we bring you part four of the debate between senatorial candidates George Allen and James Webb you have never heard. You can hear the full press conference as well as last week's installment at WRIR.org. Just go to our website, WRIR.org, click schedule, Monday, 12 noon, and the line and link for Homespun C-SPAN, and then the read more for the appropriate show entry. So now we're bringing you to the special edition of WRIR's Homespun C-SPAN, where we take the comments of Virginia Independent Senate candidate Gail Parker and place those comments as close to the moment of debate where she said them. This debate was recorded September 18th, 2006 at the Fairfax Chamber of Commerce in Fairfax, Virginia. Gail Parker is, of course, the only woman on the recording.
Listening to Mr. Webb here today, as I did yesterday, and ever since reading the comments from five women midshipmen who are still talking about today, how Mr. Webb's written words, and written words are those that you think about, they're words that have an impact, and how that harmed them. They were words of disrespect, they were words that were demeaning of women. There were words that said that the women who are at the academy should not be there, that they're taking away a spot for a male. And women still today are dismayed that you continue to rationalize those words. When I was governor, and I'll bring up on VMI, when VMI, the court said that we needed to allow women the co-ed operation opportunities at VMI, even though we had co-ed at Virginia Tech and single gender at Mary Washington with the Virginia Women's Institute of Leadership. Our reaction is we're not going to have any abuse of women, no disrespect for women. Here was Mr. Webb 4 or 5 years after the decision was to have women at the military academy for that equal opportunity. Here he was continuing to degrade and disrespect women.
This is the pot calling the kettle black.
It's a disrespect that continues today, as last week he disrespected, again, the wishes of Nancy Reagan to stop running those misleading ads about her husband.
30 seconds, Secretary Webb.
Well, I guess this is my macaca payback. Keep trying, George.
And this keeps the voters unfocused from the real issues in this campaign, which are rail and the need to balance the federal budget.
I've been very specific about this. It was 27 years ago. George was opposing women in VMI 11 years ago. I've been around the military all my life. I've had a lot of communication from women officers over the last week supporting me. There were a lot of things that played into this issue of the right way to assimilate women into the military. My article was one of them, but there were a lot of others, and even the Washington Post article had quotes from people pointing that out.
Jeff Shapiro, you get the last question.
Next week, the Virginia General Assembly returns to work again to debate long-term financing for transportation, an issue of great significance to this audience. Senator Allen, you've a reputation as an anti-tax hawk, but you've skirted somewhat the debate in Richmond, largely between members of your own party, over new taxes for roads and rail. Would you, yes or no, encourage Republicans to consider a package that includes some new taxes and fees to finally put the transportation issue to rest? And Mr. Webb, you've been depicted as a naive newcomer to Virginia government and politics. What suggestions can you offer to any impasse at the Capitol over transportation?
I'm first on this. I find it very interesting that the previous question you're saying, worrying about federal intrusion and why you meddling in state affairs and so forth, and now you're asking me to meddle in something, and I see right many members of the General Assembly here, and I see Frank Wolf and Tom Davis and my partner John Warner on it. I think that the General Assembly will work this out. It's up to them to determine how they want to fashion more funding at the state level for roads and for transportation. The role of federal government in such matters is to help. And we were able to work as a team and get literally hundreds of billions more funding, hundreds of millions more in funding from the federal government for priorities in Virginia, including where Route 29 and 66 mesh up together at that congested interchange at Gainesville, getting funding for more lanes inside the Beltway and Interstate 66. One thing that I would hope the members of the General Assembly will look at is the public Public-Private Transportation Act. Well, I was the lead on that as a governor. It's a way of getting more private investment, and you're seeing that on not just the Dulles Toll Road. You get it on ideas on Route 28, hot lanes, on Interstate 95, and other projects. And to me, some of those tolling approaches where you get private investment are the ways that they ought to be looking at ways of getting transit and also transportation, less congestion. And those are creative ideas that I've led on, not just as a U.S. senator, but they're in place for Virginians to look at now to make sure that we reduce this congestion. And I hope the work across party lines to make sure that the funding's there, the opportunity is there for private investment, and you can count on our fellow federal delegation to continue to work together with the state to make sure that the federal share is there for essential transportation
projects.
Okay. I would make three quick points about this. The first is I do agree with Senator Allen on the need for private investment. When I was bringing American companies into Vietnam, 94 to 96 time period, that was one of the only ways that they actually could bring infrastructure into that country. It didn't have tax revenues to pay for them, and they had a concept which I discussed with Governor Kane, actually, called BOT, where you a private entity would build a road, and they would operate it until they got out an agreed-upon profit margin, which was at that time 20%, and then they would transfer it over to the government. That's the type of private sector approach that I think could be brought to bear. The second is Virginia is only getting 91 cents out of every dollar that goes out of Virginia in terms of the gas tax revenues. And I would work hard to try to make sure that would be a full dollar at least, given the growth of federal government programs in Northern Virginia. You could probably argue for more than that. And if it were at a dollar instead of 91, you're talking a minimum of $65 million a year. And the third is, we got a great governor here. He's doing a great job. I've got a good relationship with him, and I look forward very much to working with him in the future.
We need to get the traffic off of the roads and onto the rails so that we can have clean air and clean water and cut the dependency on oil. The barrier to doing that is at the federal level. The subsidy for building new roads is greater, much greater, than it is for building rail. We could save money if we build rail on the federal level. We need to either raise the rail subsidy or lower the road subsidy. We cannot pave our way out of this problem. We need to build rail, and we need to build it now.
Senator Allen, 30 seconds.
Sure, 30 seconds. There are many ideas, and there are certain things that I've been advocating that will help as far as this all gets into energy. You talk about gas taxes. We're too dependent on foreign sources of energy. We need to get more oil and natural gas developed here in our country, including off our coast in Virginia. And my proposal would have, out of the $3 billion that Virginia would get, I am proposing that 50% of that money goes to transportation in Virginia, another 25% to colleges and universities to keep in-state tuition affordable, and a quarter to the coastal communities. But that would be a heck of a chunk of money for energy independence, but also for transportation needs and infrastructure here in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
That's all the time we have for questions. Thank you, panelists. But it's now time for the closing statements. And Senator Allen, you go first. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you, George, and thank all of you all for your attention and the questions, most of the questions from the from the panelists here. And it's good to be with Jim as we discuss issues. There are many issues that are important for the future of our Commonwealth of Virginia and our nation. You know me. And that's one of the things that I think is helpful for you all as you make decisions, as well as voters throughout our Commonwealth. And that is, I have a record of performance working with you to make sure our Commonwealth is a stronger, more prosperous, and safer Commonwealth for all our citizens. When I came in as governor, I said I wanted the world to know that Virginia was open for business. And we did that. We worked together. We recruited in semiconductor fabs into Virginia, some of the largest in the world, and one of them is in Northern Virginia in Manassas. When I came in as governor, not a single computer memory chip was fabricated in Virginia. Last year, for the first time ever, the number one manufactured export from Virginia were computer memory chips, surpassing cigarettes. That is a transformation for the Commonwealth of Virginia. That's true. My friends, this is not a one-issue campaign. There are many issues that are important for the security and safety and prosperity of our country. You can count on me, as you have in the past, to continue working with you, with leaders in the General Assembly, with local leaders, and with my colleagues, Senator Warner, my teammate and partner, for ideas that actually are going to move this country forward. I'm the only candidate with a plan on energy security, the only candidate with a developed positive mission to make sure this country incents and encourages more young people to get interested in science and technology and engineering. I know that's important for our Silicon Dominion and here in Northern Virginia, but my friends, it's important for the future of our country. Us, those of us here in Virginia, are blessed by all the technology companies, many of you all who are here, that have actually helped us in homeland security. You're propelling our economy forward. It's also helping our national defense and communications and telemedicine and distance learning. But if we are not graduating sufficient numbers compared to countries that have 6 and 7 times our population. Only 15% of our engineers are women, only 6% are African-American, and the same number are Latinos. Team America needs to compete with more than only 40% of our population. You can count on me, as I have in the past, to lead in the future, to make sure that America is that land of opportunity for all, and it is done with less taxation, less litigation, energy independence, and also better education, particularly in these innovative professions. I thank you all for allowing Susan and me to serve you, and I hope and I pray and I ask you most humbly that you all will continue to allow us to work for you in our shared values and our shared vision for Virginia's future. Thank you all so very much.
This campaign is about positive solutions. Rail is a positive solution, and it permeates every aspect of our lives in Virginia. And it's a positive solution that gets us back to peace. It gets us out of that mess over there by cutting dependency on foreign oil. It makes Virginia safer for Virginia families. This year, 628 Virginians have died on our roadways already this year. That number is going up to 1,000 by the end of the year. Every year, 40,000 Americans die on our roadways. Every year. We need to innovate by building rail. We need to start today in Virginia. We need to make Virginians more competitive in broader job markets with high-speed passenger rail. We need to provide good jobs for Virginia. We can do that by building rail. And the problem resides, the barrier to building new rail resides at the federal level. We need to build rail, and I will work on that issue. I ask for your vote. I ask you to send me to Washington. That job is not too hard for me to do. I can get the job done.
I'd like to say again that I'm grateful to have been able to be up here on this podium as a candidate for the United States Senate. I can't resist a moment to say that with all of this technology that's gone into Northern Virginia, it has really helped to reshape our economy, and I tend to think that Mark Warner deserves a little bit of credit for that. I go back to something that I said when I decided that I would step forward and run for the United States Senate. Looking at the state of leadership in this country from 9/11 through Katrina, and sitting in my living room like so many other people and wanting to see strong, affirmative leadership on a wide range of issues, not simply one issue, although that issue tends to dominate a lot of our minds every day, as well it should. Every poll that we see shows that 2/3 of the people in this country believe that it's headed in the wrong direction. The difficulty is solutions, finding people who will move forward with solutions. And I can bring to the table for you, for the people of Virginia, and for the people of this country, a variety of experiences that will allow me to see a lot of these issues differently. I served in the military. I worked as a committee counsel in the Congress. I worked for 4 years in the executive branch. I've brought businesses to Southeast Asia. I've covered two wars as a journalist. I have written books, George. I have written books. I confess. And a lot of journalism. I've done different things. When I go to my grave, whether I was a United States senator or not is not going to be high on my agenda. I have led a blessed life since I left the Marine Corps. What I would like to do is to spend the next 6 years giving every ounce of my energy to helping our national defense become properly focused again, to helping to ease the divisions in this country and create more fairness in our economic system and on issues of social justice, and to be standing up to an administration that, in my view, has abused its constitutional powers over the past 5 years. Senator Allen and I have major political differences. We've laid them out today. This has been a great forum to be able to do that, and I'll look forward to the next 7 weeks of continuing to do so. Thank you very much.
It has been a great forum. It was a terrific debate. Thank you both. Thanks to all the panelists. Thanks to all of you. We'll see you on November 7th.
Thank you for listening to WRIR's own Homespun C-SPAN. Will you hear the voices that would otherwise go unheard? You just heard part four of the four parts of the debate you never heard before at the Fairfax Chamber of Commerce between George Allen and James Webb for the 2006 Virginia Senate race. And we set up independent Senate candidate Gail Parker in the back with a microphone to comment on the two candidates that were favored by the race debate for the host of this debate, the Fairfax Chamber of Commerce. This was recorded September 18th in Fairfax, Virginia. Tell your friends who may have missed it that you can hear the rest of the debate on WRIR.org. And next up is the entire press conference. It's very interesting. You can hear as the press sets up and George Allen maneuvers them into position and very artfully avoids certain questions. It's interesting to hear an entire press conference a la Homespun C-SPAN.
Just do something right over here. Mr. Cameron has the first question we'll ask you.
I thought he just asked.
No. He said, "Where's your camera?"
There he goes. We're here. We're all good.
Your one here.
Right there.
Good.
Take a step back.
Yeah, we got the projector in your face.
Yeah.
There we go.
That's good. Yeah. Oh, let's get the flag in the background. You got the flag in the background? No, you're lying. You're not telling me.
Your opponent's over there saying that he stands with Mr. McCain and Mr. Warner and Mr. Graham when it comes to interrogation and detention tactics vis-a-vis terrorists, and thinks it's about time you make a decision. Give us a feel for where you stand and what ultimately you think we should do.
What we ought to do is have people of goodwill on both sides. My good partner, John Warner, he and I have actually spoken and met this morning on this, as well as what the president's trying to do. Here's what two key principles and goals here. Number one, we need to protect Americans and allow the interrogation techniques that have been very helpful to continue. And we also need to live up to our Geneva Treaty rules, because the precedent would be if we back off it, any of our Americans who are caught by Iran or North Korea or Cuba could be tortured. And we're not for torture. We're not for waterboarding. What's going to happen? What's going to happen is that Senator Warner and the White House, I think that they're actively working together. As I said yesterday, I want to be a bridge. Be a bridge to make sure that the interrogation techniques that have been so helpful in protecting Americans from attacks and also for our troops in the field continue, while also upholding and living up to the Geneva Convention. So my prediction is, because I think there's action here, and it's one that I'm going to keep working on for the rest of this week, being a bridge so you get all these proposals. There'll be modifications, but I think you're going to see Republicans and Democrats come together, because the security of our country is too important to let these interrogation techniques stop and therefore make us more susceptible to terrorist attacks.
The president says that if the current practices aren't essentially codified in law, they're going to stop. The agency won't do it. Your opponent would allow that to happen.
Yeah, the position my opponent is seeming to take is to stop the interrogations. That is dangerous for this country, and he ought to know better. His dislike and disdain for President Bush is clouding good sense. Here's what's going to happen. You never can be sure, but I know John Warner, and I've talked to him. We've discussed this morning, just before this, several times this morning. And in fact, the reality is, I think you're going to see the White House working with Senator Warner, working with Senator McCain and others, and they're going to make some modifications, and we're going to continue these important interrogations for our security. And I also think it'll be done in such a way that all this evidentiary concerns, those all can be worked out, in my view, very easily, because whether it's Senator Warner, whether it's the White House, whether it's Negroponte, whether it's General Hayden, whether it's Lindsey Graham and John McCain, all of us want to make sure that we're securing America. When we get these enemy combatants, we want to glean information out of them. It has been helpful in the past in thwarting and foiling terrorist attacks, and it's also information that has helped our troops out in the field. We can't let that lapse just because my opponent wants to be partisan and political.
The president sounded pretty uncompromising last week. Are you persuaded now that he attacked your kids?
Yeah, they are. That was the point. Very good question, Dale, because the reality is the White House and the Senate and these leaders in particular, and me more specifically, do not want these terrorist interrogation techniques to stop. The program must continue. The other issue is, of course, the Geneva Accords, and we cannot be seen, nor should we, back off those accords. They won't matter as a practical matter that much as far as Al-Qaeda. They don't care about any of this. They lop people's heads off. My concern is that of a precedent. Then what if one of our undercover CIA agents is captured in a state such as Cuba or Venezuela or Iran or North Korea? We want to make sure that our standards are ones that they would follow as well, because if someone doesn't follow them, they can be charged with war crimes. I would also like to point out that our country, the Hamdan decision, that actually was because we appointed a lawyer to represent him, and that went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court made that decision. And so the United States has high values, and we can, from my perspective, adhere to our values and principles and the Geneva Accords, as well as continue the interrogation program without torture. And by the way, last year I was what had passed 90-9, and I'm opposed to torture, again, because of the safety for our troops that may be captured.
I've heard that Senator McCain and Senator Warner had a clear majority in the Senate for the bill that came out of the Armed Services Committee, and that's why the White House is now eager to negotiate. Is that your reading of it?
Look, these are all private conversations, but I've encouraged all the parties to continue working together. I want to be a bridge to get everyone to work together, because this interrogation program is too important for our security to let it lapse. And I do think we need to uphold American values.
Senator, we're going to do
the negotiations would have continued regardless of that vote count. But it did have a lot of support.
So the big moment of this debate was Peggy Fox's question, why did it make you so angry, and what did you think was going on there?
What do you mean made me so angry?
Well, you really sort of wheeled on her there for asking her.
Because I'm one who's always advocated. In fact, I've even said this to Jafari when they were setting up their government in Iraq, and I always talk about the four pillars of a free and just society. And the first pillar of a free and just society is freedom of religion, where rights are not enhanced nor diminished on account of religious beliefs. The second pillar is freedom of expression for men and women. The third is private ownership of property. And the fourth pillar is the rule of law, where disputes are fairly adjudicated and our God-given rights are protected. The first freedom is freedom of religion. As a governor and as a senator, I've even tried to, and have been getting funding for a monument to the first freedom in Richmond. And so for somebody to come out of the blue, first of all, dragging my mother into my thoughtless remark, which I've said is a mistake, and I apologize for, to drag my mother into this and then make whatever sort of comment that was, you just don't judge people by their ethnicity, hey Seth, ethnicity, or their religion. And it's just, and in fact, the audience had the same reaction. It's all right, they dragged his mother in, and now they're asking about her religious beliefs. And even the audience found that to be something that is contrary to our foundational values. Okay. But I answered it anyway.
Did you feel the subtext of that question?
Say what?
Will your children possibly be joining Webb's son in Iraq?
We have an 8-year-old daughter, a 15-year-old son, and an 18-year-old daughter. I was the daughter of a Marine pilot who served 2 times in Vietnam.
Let's go back. Yes, do you believe that by asking that question, that Peggy was making a suggestion about racist notions on the part of your mother? I mean,
you can interview the questioner.
Were you offended?
I think you ask anybody, what is your religious belief? Mm-hmm. He can ask, I suppose, but in the context that it was being asked, my mother, and I don't know if I said it before or after her question, is my mother of all people who taught me beyond the football meritocracy and level playing field aspects of football, where you didn't care where someone was for as long as they helped your team win. My mother's one who taught us tolerance for people of all backgrounds, nationalities, ethnicity, race, or religious beliefs, because after all, my mother's father was incarcerated by the Nazis in World War II. And when my mother would see something that is like that, that would bother her, and she shared that with us as children. And so the concept of freedom and equality and justice for all, interestingly enough, was taught by my mother as much as anyone else in my life.
I guess what I'm getting to is, do you feel like Peggy was saying your mom used to use the
N-word? She never did. That was her. First of all, she never would.
We made that clear, Bob.
Thank you for listening to WRIR's own Homespun C-SPAN, where you will hear the voices that would otherwise go unheard. You just heard the entire press conference with George Allen following the Fairfax Chamber of Commerce debate. Before that press conference, you just heard the last 15 minutes, that is part 4 of 4 parts of the debate you never heard before. At the Fairfax Chamber of Commerce, between George Allen and James Webb for the 2006 Virginia Senate race. It's the debate you never heard before because we set up independent Green Party Senate candidate Gail Parker in the back with a microphone to comment on the two candidates that were favored for the race debate by the host for this debate, the Fairfax Chamber of Commerce. This was recorded September 18th in Fairfax, Virginia. Tell your friends who may have missed it that you can hear the rest of the debate on WRIR.org and next time on Homespun C-SPAN, debates between city council candidates recorded at the Richmond Crusade for Voters.